All right, we are here to look at the seven steps to awakening. And we're looking at step three. And tonight I am going to start with quote 548. And in fact, what I'm going to do right now is put a link in the room. There's a link to 548A. Whenever we see an A, that means that I contemplated this quote for some time, and you know, you could say more than one stream of clarity came. And I haven't looked ahead, so I don't know how many 548s are entered in my journal. Sometimes there's like an A and a B. Sometimes it goes all the way up to like A, B, C, D, E, F, you know, as I just went deeper and deeper with a quote. So we'll find out what we have when we start looking at the journal. If somebody is listening on the radio and you want to join us in the journal, what you can do is go to RDA7, that is the digit 7, it is not spelled out, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And then when on the menu bar across the top of the screen, you can choose step 3 and then click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to 548A, because that's where we're going to begin. And what I would like to do before we start is just take a moment of silence. So if y'all would join me in that, I would appreciate it. Amen. All right, so I'm going to read quote number 548 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. This is Sri Muru Ganar, who was a devotee of Ramana Maharshi's, and he was the poet who wrote the Garland of Guru's Sayings, but this is not from the Garland of Guru's Sayings. This is from Muru Ganar himself. So here's the quote. In the hearts of true devotees that are infused with the noble light of grace, the dark ignorance of the ghostly ego, unable to operate, will disappear. In the mind in which the delusive and destructive ego has completely died, the glory of grace will spontaneously shine forth in abundance. Again, this is Muru Ganar speaking from his own experience of awakening. And let me read his quote one more time. In the hearts of true devotees that are infused with the noble light of grace, the dark ignorance of the ghostly ego, unable to operate, will disappear. In the mind in which the delusive and destructive ego has completely died, the glory of grace will spontaneously shine forth in abundance. So I'm going to look at my journal now at 548. And this is what I wrote as I contemplated this quote, or at least the first time. Grace calls, and grace answers the call. There may be the perception of effort and choosing in the process of answering, but it is grace that gives one the ability to effort, and grace that gives one the ability to make the choice. I remember this contemplation clearly. I didn't until I started reading what I wrote, but then the contemplation came back to me. I remember this contemplation clearly because I had an unanswered question in my mind that had been there for a while. I wondered why my experience seemed to be different than what some other people tell me that their experience is. My experience was, well, if we start at the beginning of the story, the The beginning of the story was probably when I was around 28 years old. And although I don't remember why, I wanted to find truth. And at that time, I thought truth would be found in a Christian religion with the proper interpretation of the New Testament. And so I set out to find the Christian religion that had the proper interpretation of the New Testament. And I spent a lot of time looking into to pretty much all of the Christian religions in the United States and looking at what they believed and looking up the scriptures they cited and really believing that I would find one with the proper interpretation of the New Testament and that would be the truth. But what seemed to happen is as I looked at each of these different religions, just one by one by one, what I found is that their interpretation of the New Testament did not hold up consistently. There was always a breakdown somewhere where it ceased to make sense, even if you were looking objectively. And at the end of the search, I really thought that I had kind of failed because I didn't find a Christian religion with the proper interpretation of the New Testament. But what I realize now when I look back on that is I did not fail. And this was maybe my first experience of grace. I asked for the truth. It's my expectation that was mistaken. And what grace did in the process of this seemingly research project that took many months, if not many years, was answered my question just to let me know I was looking in the wrong direction. The next thing that happened was actually several years after that, I was probably 33. And I happened to be watching Oprah Winfrey. I used to watch Oprah every day back then. This was around 1993. And I saw Marianne Williamson on Oprah. And, I heard something in what she was saying, so I got her book, read it twice, and then, you know, just felt I needed the source, which was the Course in Miracles, the source that she was writing about, so I bought the course, and I did not understand the course. I tried doing the workbook lessons. I actually thought Jesus was unfair in expecting me to practice the workbook lessons during the workday because I had other things to do. And I lost interest in the course pretty quickly. Fast forward now many years later. Now probably, I think I was probably, I was 40, 43, so we're talking 10 years later. I had set several goals for my life, and I felt like I had achieved all of those goals. And I started just asking in my mind, what next? And when I started asking that question in my mind, the reminder of that book, A Course in Miracles, which I had put in the drawer next to my bed. I'd even moved from one house to another, but it stayed in that drawer next to my bed, and I hadn't touched it in that 10 years. The memory of that book came, and I pulled that book out and started reading it. And now I could understand it. It was like, it was easy to understand. The same book that I had not been able to read 10 years earlier. So I decided to commit myself to it. There was an upcoming vacation, and I took it with me on that upcoming vacation. And I said a prayer as I was about to start the workbook and the text. And then during the prayer, something seemed to come down over me. And that something was a desire to surrender the rest of my life. I didn't even know what I was surrendering it to, but to surrender the rest of my life. And after that prayer, I began reading the text and studying the workbook. But what happened was surprising even to me, and that is that I was consistent with it. I did the workbook in the way it's meant to be done. If I was asked to remember something every hour throughout the day, I remembered it every hour throughout the day, even though I was very, very busy in meetings all of the time. I would quietly remember it in my office with eyes closed if I was alone in my office. But if I was in a meeting, I would quietly remember it with my eyes open. Sometimes if I had to do something longer, I would escape to the bathroom and go into a bathroom stall. I did a lot of my course lessons on the toilet, but I went there to get away so that I could give it the concentration that it needed. And as you all know, visions started to come to teach me the workbook lessons, and then came this one vision which led to me hearing Holy Spirit in words and writing with Holy Spirit, and then soon teaching with Holy Spirit. And, you know, it just began to snowball after that. And the guidance to leave my job, and the guidance to, you know, to move. And then NTI came, and then Laurent came, and then Inner Romana came, and then move again to Pueblo. And, you know, eventually Awakening Together came, and all this stuff happened. And my experience the entire time was kind of two things simultaneously. One was that I was doing nothing. In other words, I never felt like I sat out to surrender my life. The surrender just happened in a prayer. I never felt like I decided to write with Holy Spirit or teach. That came as a calling, and I just said yes. I never felt that I interpreted the New Testament, or that I started the relationship with Laurent, or that I ended the relationship with Laurent, or that I had anything to do with Inner Romana coming, or that I decided to move to Pueblo, or even that I decided to start Awakening Together. I never felt like I did anything. I never felt like I did anything. And at the same time, the other experience is, I felt like what I've always done is, you know, what the Course would call accept the atonement for myself. You know, the miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself. I've always felt that that's all I've really been trying to do. While everything else has been happening, I've always just been trying to watch my own mind, find my own errors, let go of my own errors, stay in my own heart, become more and more open to spontaneous guidance. I feel like that's the only thing I've been doing. And I started this whole little dialogue. I had to give you a little bit of history, but I said I wondered why my experience was different from other people's, and I certainly don't mean everyone's, but there have been a number of people. In fact, one just in the last week who have said to me, but Regina, I'm not like you. In fact, this person even said, the rest of us aren't like you. I'm not like you. I can't practice in the way you practice, or I can't hear spirit in the way you hear spirit, or I can't surrender in the way you surrender. And I always felt like I didn't do those things. So what does this mean? When someone else tells me they can't do what I'm doing, when I never did it in the first place, what does that mean? And what's in the way? What's in the way of being able to do it if you aren't the one that does it? How, you know, is there any way that I could be helpful to someone who's saying, I can't practice like you practice, I can't feel intuition like you feel intuition, I can't surrender like you surrender. How can I help them when I didn't do it in the first place? It's, you know, it's not like I can say, well, here's how, because I never did it. Well, as I was contemplating this quote by Muru Gunnar, the answer that came was, grace calls. And grace answers the call. First of all, I think that explains my perception that I didn't do any of that. But secondly, it might provide an answer to people that are somehow watching my life, hearing my story, and saying, I can't do what you do. I guess the question would then be, well, what is grace doing with you? What is natural for you? What is happening with you? Right? What is grace doing with you? Instead of looking outward at a Regina or anybody else, if you just look back inward, what is grace doing with you? This one person that I was speaking to earlier this week told me that what he can do, what's natural to him, is just to be in silence for long periods of time. He even told me how he does that, and I didn't even understand. Like, if I had tried to copy him, if I had tried to copy him and have his experience of hours of silence, I would be knocking on his door in 6 months saying, you know what, I can't do what you do, thinking something was wrong with me. I can't do what you do. I don't have that experience. Tell me again how you did it. You know? Grace calls and grace answers the call. What that says to me is that whatever we are to do on this spiritual awakening path, whatever we are to do, first of all, Adele has written in the room, our heart is calling. First of all, it is placed in your heart in some way to do that. And then secondly, the ability is given to do that. It all comes from grace. And so the feeling then is, I didn't do it. I mean, I agree, it happened to me. I was there the whole time. But I didn't do it. That's the feeling I have every single time I teach. Someone asked me several weeks ago, they said, this person said, Regina, I want to teach, but I find it difficult. How do you do it? And my answer was, I don't. I never have. Grace calls and grace answers the call. So I guess what that would say to me then is if I am trying to do something that is not in some way coming natural, it's like it's not coming within me how to do it. I'm trying to learn from someone outside of me and I can't seem to grasp what they're explaining. I can't seem to do what they're doing. Well, to me, that's just kind of like barking up the wrong tree or trying to walk up the wrong path. The question then, instead of trying to do what I think I should be doing or even what I think I want to do, you know, like that idea of being a spiritual teacher, you know, teaching has a very specific purpose. Teaching has two very specific purposes that I'm aware of. Teaching is a path of learning or awakening, and that's what this room is dedicated to. But teaching is also a method of awakening. As one person teaches, another person listens, and some kind of spark sets off in their mind, some kind of insight, some type of clarity. So there's some type of transmission that happens. So teaching is both about, it's both a path of awakening, and it's a method that our awakening self uses to transmit. But then there's this ego interpretation of teaching. And the ego interpretation of teaching, I'm going to have to guess here, but the ego interpretation of teaching is, there's probably several motives. You know, one of which is, getting attention for the self. Another might be that I think I'm right, and so I have to convince others of this way of thinking. And I don't know what other motives there may be, because I never had a motive for teaching, so I have to kind of imagine. But I know that there are people, because they've talked to me, I know there are people who have a motive for wanting to be the teacher, a motive for wanting to get out there in front of others. And it's clear that it's coming from them, not from grace, not from the calling. Because, first of all, the pathway isn't being provided. And secondly, there's just too much doing on their part. They're trying to do it. They're trying to make it happen. And that's not just true of teaching. You know, if I was trying to meditate because I thought I was supposed to meditate in some certain way every morning, you know, that has never been natural for me to sit for, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours in meditation. And if I was trying to do that, you know, the clarity on how to do it isn't there. It would be like this struggle uphill without the universe assisting me and drawing me into it. So whether it's trying to teach, whether it's trying to meditate, whether it's trying to contemplate, whether it's trying to do anything on the spiritual path, if it's me trying to do it because I think I should, or because I think there's some value in it that I think I'm lacking, right? There's some value in it that I'm lacking, and so I need that to fulfill a lack. Well, that's not grace. That's ego. It seems that when grace calls us on this spiritual path to do whatever it is we're to do on the spiritual path, grace also provides everything that is needed for us to do it. If my path was one of sitting still and meditating for long hours per day, I am certain that direction, that inner direction of how to do it and that ability to do it would be provided. Contemplation is very, very easy for me. It always has been. I never had to learn contemplation. So, grace calls and grace answers the call. Now, there may be the perception of effort and choosing in the process of answering. You know, like when I was in my relationship with Laurent, when I was in, well, I don't, Adela's asking, is living in the flow the same as grace? I don't think so entirely. And that's starting what I'm talking about now. The next sentence, which is, there may be the perception of effort and choosing. Because when you're living in the flow, there is no perception of effort and no perception of choosing. So now we're talking about the fact that even though grace is calling and grace is answering the call, there may still be the perception of effort and the perception of choosing. And, you know, when I was in the relationship with Laurent, again, I don't feel like I started that relationship. It didn't come from me. I wasn't some girl who saw some guy and thought he was really cute and wanted to be with him. You know, it never came from me. But when I was in the relationship with him, there was a lot of difficulty, a lot of struggle, a lot of inner difficulty. You know, because on the one hand, I hated him and I wanted to kick him out of the house. Yeah, I wanted to tell him what an idiot he was. On the one hand, right? And on the other hand, I knew in my heart how important this relationship was for my awakening, for my healing. And I wanted to embrace every opportunity it was providing. So you see, I had a split mind or a split heart. This is why there was the perception of effort and choosing. Grace provided the relationship. Grace provided every opportunity that came through that relationship. When I sat down and asked spirit questions, grace provided all of the information I needed to do what I needed to do in that relationship in order to let go of values and beliefs that I was holding on to and become freer, right? Grace gave me everything. But because my mind was split, do you hear that? Please hear that carefully. Because my mind was split, I wasn't 100% on board with the corrective aspect of mind. A part of me wanted all of the opportunities that the corrective aspect or Holy Spirit was offering, but a part of me You know, wanted to tell him what an idiot he was and kick him out and get things back my way. So you see, even though grace was providing everything, including all of the ability I needed to do what I needed to do in that relationship, I still had the perception of effort and choosing because I had a split mind, because I had a split heart, because I wanted two things, not one. I wanted awakening, or I wanted to know truth, right? But I also wanted things my way. And that's where the perception of effort came from. So when we say whatever is natural for you, you know, when we say grace will provide you the way to awaken, grace will provide you the path, and what you have to do is find inside yourself what grace is providing. You have to find your way from within yourself. We're not saying, and it will all be easy, because chances are you have a split mind and split heart too. Which means even though grace is providing everything you need, there's still a struggle and a perception of choice. So one, copying someone else never works. You know, there's a teacher that I love dearly that I walked away from because she told me that I needed to meditate. And I had to really look at that and say, is that true? When I have tried multiple times and I just can't, not in the way she was talking about. I have a form of meditation that I do practice, which is different. And I won't go into that right now. That would take us off topic. But the type of meditation she was talking about, the setting still type of meditation for hours, right? If I was to believe her that I had to do that to awaken, I would just torture myself. I would just torture myself. I can't think of anything else that would be accomplished because grace has not provided that doorway to me. And I think sometimes that's what happens with people who contact me wanting to know how to do what I do, what Regina does, is they're looking out at Regina. They're listening to Regina's teachings, and I'm really happy that Regina's teachings are in some way speaking to them. But to try and copy Regina or any other teacher and do things exactly the way they do them, that's an error. You know, we always need to look within. We always need to find our natural way of awakening. And everyone has a natural way. Everyone has what Ramana Maharshi called a tendency, right? A tendency. Some people have a tendency towards devotion. Some people have more of an intellectual tendency, and that can be used with inquiry. You know, some people have a tendency to be service oriented, right? And it's through service that they literally let go of ego. So finding your own tendency, finding your own path, and everything is provided. And so it's natural for you, but natural doesn't mean that it will necessarily be easy. Because again, the struggle comes from your split mind, your split purpose, your split heart. So grace calls and grace answers the call. There may be the perception of effort and choosing in the process of answering, but it is grace that gives one the ability to effort and grace that gives one the ability to make the choice. Grace is always there. In that relationship with Laurent, which was, you know, the most difficult time of all, on my spiritual path, the most difficult period, every single thing that Holy Spirit asked me to do, I was able to do. But at the same time, there's not this feeling that I did it. You know, like when I was given the code, the message of the code, and taught how to let go of thoughts of hate using the code, I was then also given guidance to join a gym, which at first I did not understand. I thought it was bizarre to have this guidance to join a gym, and I resisted it 3 times. The third time, the guidance was so clear, I joined the gym. But then I found running on that treadmill, and I've never jogged in my life either, by the way. I could never jog very long, but I could run on that treadmill during this period of time. So even that ability was temporarily given. I could run on that treadmill during this period of time. And as I run, I could look at those hate thoughts in such a clear way. And I could one by one practice letting go of them in the way I was taught through my understanding of the code. But what gave me that ability to run? And what gave me that ability to look at those thoughts? Where did that come from? Grace. So it's kind of an interesting mixture. I think sometimes, you know, we want things to be black and white. You know, like if it's grace and it's natural, then it's easy. And if I'm struggling and it's hard, then that means I need to drop it and do something else. But I think what I'm trying to say is that it might be somewhere in the middle. It might be that it is grace and that it is natural. And that the way to do it is given. And there still might be a struggle because of the split mind. And so in order to follow the path that grace is given, you may have to work a bit. It may be both. But you have to find within yourself the difference between what is that natural path and when are you truly not listening to grace, not following the path of grace, and ego has you struggling on a spiritual path that's going nowhere. Because it's just not your path. Grace calls through grace. Yeah, what else? I don't know how else I would word that. Grace just appears. Grace just is. Grace just happens. When I say grace, when I use the word grace, I mean that it happens. It may even happen through me, but I'm not doing it. So you have to give credit to something else, and that something else I call grace. So again, 548A, grace calls and grace answers the call. There may be the perception of effort and choosing in the process of answering, but it is grace that gives one the ability to effort and grace that gives one the ability to make the choice. So where is grace for you? It's there. I'm not. When I say where is grace for you, I don't mean, you know, that it's not there. Where did it go? It is there. The question is, can you tune into it? Can you find it? Can you follow it? Even if it seems to be different than what everybody else is doing. I think that becomes a challenge too sometimes. Barb says, how does that seem to be when we have a practice that does not involve journaling and we do the true discernment class and a part of the focus is journaling? One of the things that's going to happen if you're in the minister preparation program is you're actually going to go through many different types of practices. Like you won't be journaling throughout the entire program. Of course, Barb, you're not going through the entire program, so you won't see this. But hopefully one of the things that happens is if it hasn't clicked for someone what their path of grace is, as they try these different things, it will. They will find what seems more natural for them. They will discover it. Because we're going to try so many different things. And yet they will also see the advantage in all of them. And, you know, and see that all paths are equal. All paths are created equal. Right? It's not like one thing is better than another. Okay, Barb says, I like journaling, but I'm wondering for others. How does that seem to be when we have a practice that does not involve journaling and we do the true discernment class and part of the focus is journaling? Yeah, you try it. You try it, but if journaling is not for you, it probably will not stick at some point. You'll naturally move into something else. Yeah. Yeah, the MPP program offers, like the next class we're going to do is the true meditation class. So, and then we're also going to do a couple classes that are contemplation, you know, so people will have different opportunities to try different paths and find what really worked for them. All right, if you're in 548A, let's scroll down underneath and click on 548B Again, this is still the same quote, but I'm going to read the quote again just to refresh our memories of what Muru Ganar said. In the hearts of true devotees that are infused with the noble light of grace, the dark ignorance of the ghostly ego, unable to operate, will disappear. In the mind in which the delusive and destructive ego has completely died, the glory of grace will spontaneously shine forth in abundance. So number 548B. Once called, awakening has begun. What has started will continue until there is no trace of ego remaining. Once called, awakening has begun. What has started will continue until there is no trace of ego remaining. You know, most of us find ourselves in process. I remember that used to seem to bother Laurent, actually, being in process. He wanted to be done, I think. And it bothered him to be in process and not done, whatever done means. And I remember one time when we were talking about this, it came to me, again, from grace, it came to me to draw a circle on a piece of paper, you know, a small circle, you know, maybe, I don't know, half an inch at most. I think it was smaller than half an inch in diameter or circumference. I forget all those words. Across. I think it was smaller than half an inch. But to draw a circle, and I told Laurent, I said, see this, I might have even colored it in. See this dot? I said, this is done. Right? This is done. And then inside of that, I pointed inside of that circle, and I said, this is where we are. We are being done. Right? We're inside done. We're being done. That's what's happening now. It's not like done is over there somewhere and we're running as hard as we can and we can't quite make it. We can't quite reach it. It's not like those dreams where as you run and run, the aisle gets longer and longer and longer. Right? We are being done. That is what is happening. And when you realize that, at least from my experience, when you realize that you're being done, although there still may be some work and there still may be some struggling and there still may be some choosing because you still have that split mind, split purpose, split desire, when you realize that you're being done, truly realize it, a part of you is able to just watch with a sense of curiosity, like how will this story unfold? How will this being done finish itself? Something in you relaxes. Again, if you think being done is over there, you know, or out in the future, and you have to work really hard to get to it, that's a painful struggle. But when you realize being done is happening to you, and you're just watching the show, doesn't the Course say something like that? The Course says something about how this is all over, and we're just reviewing it in our mind. Right? We're being done. And so we just need to watch the show. Again, there may still be the perception of some struggle and choosing. That's because of our split mind. But the awakening has started and we are being done. It's happening. And now it's like watching a movie. How will it happen here in this story, in the story of Regina, you know, or the story of Nancy, or Barb, or Cindy, or Adele, or Dan, or, you know, anybody else that's in the room, right? Yeah, watching grace happen. So once called, awakening has begun. What has started will continue until there is no trace of ego remaining. So if you're in 548B, you can just scroll down. There's a 548C. Let's click on that. Again, Muru Ganar said, in the hearts of true devotees that are infused with the noble light of grace, the dark ignorance of the ghostly ego, unable to operate, will disappear. In the mind in which the delusive and destructive ego has completely died, the glory of grace will spontaneously shine forth in abundance. And as I contemplated that further, I wrote this. Although a process may appear to be involved, the moment of no ego, only self, is always spontaneous. Until that moment has fully occurred, one does best to disregard ego and let it die. Somebody asked me, I think it was either here last Sunday night or maybe it was last Wednesday. I think it might have been last Wednesday when I was teaching on Wednesday morning. But somebody asked me the question, Regina, you know, don't you feel more awakened now than you were 15 years ago? And I said, the answer to that is yes and no. And I said, yes, in some ways, because I do feel, you know, like there are what we would call more blocks to love's presence have been removed. And so there's less of a struggle for me. My mind is less split. I am more focused on purpose, more centered, not totally, but more centered on what I truly want. So there's less struggle. You know, I'm more open to spontaneous guidance, more willing to follow that spontaneous guidance when I receive it in the mind. And so in that way, it seems like I'm more awake than I was 15 years ago. And I said, but no, because, you know, you're either awake or you're not awake. Awakening itself is not a process. And, you know, the way to understand that maybe would be if we had a bowl full of sand and somebody told you to empty out every grain of sand from that bowl. Well, you take some of the sand out, there's less sand. You take some more sand out, there's less sand. You take some more sand out, pretty soon there's just a little bit of sand in the bottom, and maybe you get a wet paper towel or something to daub it up. But until every grain of sand is out of that bowl, there's still some sand in the bowl. So less sand along the way, and you can see the effects of less sand. You see more and more bowl, right? More and more bowl is exposed. But the bowl is not sandless until it is sandless. And until you get that last little grain of sand out of that bowl, there's still sand in the bowl. Well, awakening is like that. You know, we're not actually awake as long as ego is present to any degree. Not the way I define the word awakening. Now, just to qualify that, there are other people who use the word differently. So we always have to pay attention to what one means when they speak. But when I say awake, I mean only self. No ego, only self. No ego, only self. And that happens spontaneously in the moment that it happens. And until that moment, even if there may seem to be a gradual reduction of ego, no ego still has not happened. So, no, I do not think I am more awake than I was 15 years ago, because there are no degrees. Although a process may appear to be involved, the moment of no ego, only self, is always spontaneous. That last bit of sand, when it comes out, that moment of a clean bowl is spontaneous. It wasn't a clean bowl until that moment when that last grain of sand came out, right? Although a process may appear to be involved, the moment of no ego, only self, is always spontaneous. Until that moment has fully occurred, one does best to disregard ego and let it die. Disregard ego and let it die. You know, because of course ego thrives on our attention. Ego actually gets stronger as we give it our attention. So that would be like putting sand back in the bowl. That's not very helpful. If your goal is a clean bowl, to be putting sand back in is not very helpful. And you know, one thing that I've experienced, and I'm guessing I'm not the only one, but of course I don't know this, but one thing that I experienced is, you know, I was really vigilant. I was really vigilant during what I call the purification process, when there was a lot of suffering going on because of my beliefs and my values, and they were being triggered through grace so that I could see them and let them go. But there was a lot of suffering going on. Life was really, really hard, and I had to be very, very, very vigilant. But then after a certain amount of sand was removed from the bowl, it got easier. It got easier. I wasn't really suffering anymore. And what I found when I wasn't suffering anymore was that my vigilance began to wane. I wasn't as vigilant as I used to be. And do you know what woke me up from that? From not being as vigilant as I used to be? The suffering started to come back. During that time of not being vigilant, some sand made its way back into the bowl. So, one thing we have to be careful about is when it gets easier, when we are happier, when we are more at peace, when we are in the flow more, we have to be careful that we don't become less vigilant if this job is not finished. If there is any ego at all, it is best to remain vigilant at all times. Although a process may appear to be involved, the moment of no ego, only self, is always spontaneous. Until that moment has fully occurred, one does best to disregard ego and let it die. So we want to remain vigilant at not believing ego, not falling for ego, not giving ego our attention, not reacting from ego, not planning from ego, right? Not regretting from ego. Do our best to stay focused on our spiritual practice, whichever one grace gives us. For me, that's contemplation. I need to spend time in contemplation every morning. And I need to return my mind to contemplation throughout the day. Another thing that I need to do is I need to check within for what I am to do. If I don't check within for what I am to do and I start ordering the day myself, I'm slipping back into my thinking mind. I'm giving ego attention. Ego tells me what the priorities are. So I need to remain vigilant at asking within, checking with that intuition all the time, following the guidance of that intuition all of the time. But when I remain vigilant, I can feel the effects of that vigilance because I'm happy. I'm just so happy. The last couple of days we've been shopping here. I have had a spontaneous urge to completely change the way I dress. I'm giving away all of my old clothes and I'm buying new ones. Few exceptions. There's a tiny bit of few things I'm keeping. But for the most part, I'm giving away. I've emptied out my closet and I'm buying new things. And what I noticed, because shopping, now some women, of course, love shopping, but shopping in this personality, Regina's lifetime, shopping's always been something I actually hated. I hated shopping, right? And so for the last, you know, Friday and Saturday, I shopped all day long, shopping for this new wardrobe. And what I noticed was how happy I was. And it amazed me because, again, you know, some women are just happy shopping, but not Regina. Not Regina. And I noticed whether, you know, and Jasmine is what she calls brutally honest. So when I put something on that she doesn't like for some reason, you know, she can even throw out, you know, pretty direct words about how that makes me look. And I remember one time I put on like four or five things in a row that she just did not like. And I remember just the smile on my face, just the happiness. Even though I knew I needed to fill up my closet or put clothes in my closet again, and yet at first it seemed like she didn't like anything, so I wasn't buying anything. And I don't like to shop. I mean, this should have frustrated me. You know, I don't like shopping anyway. I don't really like spending money on clothes. And if I am going to, I want to get it done fast. And here's Jasmine not liking anything. And I was just happy. I mean, I was just happy. I noticed the big smile I had on my face the whole time. And I thought, this is amazing. Like, this is amazing. I'm happy. You know, it's something that before would have totally not made me happy. But that's what happens if we remain vigilant. Is if we remain vigilant, we're happy, and it's not dependent on the circumstance. The happiness just is.